From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The city of Minneapolis, Minnesota, is the epicenter of protests against racist police brutality. And this week is the middle of 6 days of memorials leading up to the funeral of the man whose death sparked a national uprising, George Floyd, who was killed by 4 police officers on Memorial Day, was memorialized in a high-profile event on Thursday as protests continued throughout the city and all over the nation. Now the Minneapolis City Council has banned chokeholds during arrests and requires officers to intervene when their colleagues are breaking the law. Some members of the city council are even considering disbanding the police. All 4 officers in Floyd's killing have been charged and are being held in custody. We go now to Minneapolis to speak with Michael McDowell. He is a community organizer with the group Westside Community Organization, involved with Black Lives Matter Minneapolis. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the program, Michael.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So first, tell me about your involvement with the protests and what it's been like to be on the streets of Minneapolis as all eyes nationally are on the city and even really internationally.
Yeah. So to be on the ground here has been really intense. We've seen this work swelling over the past, I'd say, 5 years, because we had the Black Lives Matter Minneapolis chapter founded in our city of Minneapolis in 2014. And we've been talking about defunding the police and reinvesting in community for about 5 years now. And this conversation hasn't been taken seriously. And we've had so many statistics come out around Minnesota being like the second worst state for Black folks to live in when it comes to, you know, housing, when it comes to unemployment, when it comes to median income compared to their white counterparts. So we've seen on different fronts how Black folks are oppressed in Minnesota. And so what's happened in Minnesota is not an isolated incident. It's a reaction to a system that's been violent in so many different ways. As I said, in housing and unemployment, when it comes to transportation, like so many different areas, we see Black folks and people of color oppressed in the Twin Cities. And it's been really beautiful to see the city's reaction to the uprising, because like folks have never been talking about disbanding the police, but abolishing the police has been a conversation we've been having for 5 years with Black Lives Matter Minneapolis. And there's groups on the ground like Black Visions Collective and Reclaim the Block and MPD 150 that have been having these conversations also around divesting from police, because why is the police budget significantly higher than our budget for, you know, public housing or the money that we're going to give to, you know, transportation or what have you? It's been really cool also to see how youth-led this movement is. There's a lot of Black youth, a lot of Black trans youth, a lot of Black young femmes that are out there leading the charge and taking up space. And it's really beautiful to see my city also coming together and creating these systems that we've been saying we want to see. Like, for instance, the Sheraton Hotel in Minneapolis, homeless folks started to show up and they didn't have anywhere to go. And the owner, during this uprising and this time of the pandemic, they decided that we're going to train these folks that don't have a place to stay on how to run the facility, how to keep it sanitized during COVID, and make this a living space for folks who are homeless. We're seeing a community come together on the streets and do food drives because the grocery store was destroyed. And so now mothers and elderly and whoever who needs insulin or, you know, diapers for their kids or food, they're able to come to these different sites and be taken care of. So out of all of the chaos that's come out of this, I'm also seeing the world that we want to create come out of this. And it's been really beautiful.
President Trump on Friday touted the slight drop in unemployment figures as the greatest thing that can happen for race relations, for the African American community, for the Asian American, Hispanic American, for women, for everything. As he said, we all saw what happened last week. We can't let that happen. Hopefully, George is looking down and saying, this is a great thing that's happening for our country. It's a great day for him. It's a great day for everybody. This is a great, great day in terms of equality. This is Trump during his comments at the White House Rose Garden while he was signing a small piece of legislation. What do you make of his comments?
I think it's very well known that we're under a fascist government, and that he's been very plain about that. We're coming out and saying, like, Antifa is a terrorist organization. So you're saying an organization that literally is an ideology that of, like, fascism is not good. We don't want fascism. Is a terrorist organization. He's shown that he will cross any line and he doesn't have any boundaries. So it doesn't surprise me that he's coming after, a black man that's been murdered by the police. And basically it sounds like slander and, like, extremely disrespectful, because if he was actually remorseful or felt bad about it, he would have, like, said his condolences to the family or reached out or something like that.
He did speak on the phone, I believe, with the parents of George Floyd, and they were very disappointed with his reaction and the way in which he spoke. And other people have also mentioned whenever Trump has made condolence phone calls, he rarely sounds even remotely sympathetic.
Yeah, I had no idea that he had called. And I'm pretty sure the family, I don't think that they've been, like, pushing that out there. I don't really have much to say. He just showed that, like, he only cares about himself. He only cares about winning and, like, making himself look good. So even if he did call someone, it wasn't out of, like, being actually remorseful, but it's, like, saving face, making himself look good to the black community, because him and Joe are really fighting for the black vote. Joe has already said, you know, if you vote for Trump, then you're not black, basically. And so there's this thing where they're both fighting for the black vote. So I see whatever he does, like showing up or calling the family or whatever, is just to save face in the black community.
Let's talk about how the memorials have been going. I understand that there are supposed to be 6 days of memorials leading up to George Floyd's funeral. There were memorials held also in Rayford, North Carolina, where he has relatives, and in Houston, Texas, where he lived for many years. So in these three cities, and of course Minneapolis, there were memorials that began Thursday, go through on Tuesday. What have these memorials been like? I mean, we've seen photos of the church where his casket has been placed and the family gathered and Reverend Al Sharpton speaking. But outside, what has it been like?
It's been really beautiful to see that community come together, because his memorial site on 38th in Chicago, where he was killed here in Minneapolis, has become, it's like this center for community love and to get resources, and there's cooking and cookouts and barbecues, there's music, there's dancing, and in the middle of the street there's a big mural of George's face with flowers all around it. And folks come from all over the Midwest, I'm hearing, just to pay their respects, to drop off flowers, to be in community, to hear from the family, because the family's in that space a lot. And folks have just been holding space. It's become like this sacred ground almost. And the city, I think it's a 2-block radius where no cars can come near it. And so it makes it so that there's just this massive gathering of people who are paying respects to George Floyd. It feels like 24/7. There's folks who come at like 4 a.m. There's folks who come at like 8 a.m. There's always a big swell of people on 38th in Chicago here.
George Floyd's 6-year-old daughter, Gianna, was caught on video sitting on the shoulders of a family friend saying, "My daddy changed the world." This is about George Floyd, Michael, but it's also, of course, about every person symbolized by George Floyd in Minneapolis and other cities as well, right?
Yes, it definitely is. And like I said, too, this is not an isolated incident. Like, there's been so many folks, black folks killed by law enforcement. I could sit here all day saying the names, which it's really sad. But then there's so many other things too. I think the fact that we're in a pandemic, the fact that a lot of folks don't have jobs right now.
And George Floyd had the coronavirus, right? They found out in the autopsy that he had actually been infected by the virus weeks before he was killed.
Mm-hmm. And so this is, we see that it's like, we already know that the coronavirus is disproportionately affecting the black community at higher rates. And so that's something I'm also concerned about in this time, is we have so many folks out protesting and doing this. Some of our demands locally are that, you know, yes, people are out in the streets, but we want some of that police budget to actually go to COVID and like PPE and making sure that we have the medical supplies, the beds, all these things needed to support community, because we know that COVID cases are going to spike at some point. And right now we're seeing situations where our nurses here don't have, you know, protective equipment, but we're looking at the police and riot gear and all of the funding that goes to them to be overly militarized to deal with peaceful protesters, and things just aren't lining up. So I'm seeing the public's opinion completely shift. They're like, no, we need our caregivers to have just as much money as our police.
And what do you make of Mayor Jacob Frey? He was at the memorial on Thursday. He knelt down, apparently cried in front of George Floyd's casket. But isn't the mayor the decision maker when it comes to police? What do you make of his reaction to the protests, his justification for police actions? How much responsibility does he bear?
He bears a lot of responsibility, especially I talk about this all the time with politicians. Like, even if you know you don't have the power to do something, you can come out and say something symbolically, because folks are still humans. And so I like that he's showing up to the memorial. But as far as like him actually defunding the police, actually willing to have a conversation with community around what does it look like to disband the police, because right now this is just a conversation that's happening with the council, and Mayor Frey will probably be our biggest pushback on that, because I know that he is also a big supporter of the downtown businesses, and police exist to protect Capitol, and I don't see him I don't see him being swayed without some public pushing. I don't think he's just going to do this out of the goodness of his heart, because he also has, he's still pretty pro-police.
The city council this week voted to ban the use of chokeholds of the kind that Derek Chauvin had with George Floyd, pinning him down with his knee for more than 8 minutes. It also voted to require police to report and intervene anytime they see another officer engaged in unauthorized use of force, because, of course, the other three officers, at first we thought that they were standing by and watching Derek Chauvin. We now know from other video evidence that at least a couple of others were helping him pin Floyd's body down. How do you, is this a victory for Minneapolis, and is it enough?
I don't see it as a victory. It's cool that we're coming up with all these reform things, but they're not going to be enough, because we've already come out with competency training. We've already come out with body cams. We've already come out with, you know, community engagement efforts, community review boards, like all these things. Like, it almost feels like we've tried everything to hold the police accountable, and at this point, we need something completely different than police. That's why this conversation is being had around disbanding police and starting new, because it's been shown that law enforcement is not here to protect and serve. It's like the statistics are there, the videos are there, the distrust is there, the trauma is there. And so many different communities. It's not just the Black community. It's the Indigenous community, the Latinx community, because also we separate ICE from the police, but also ICE is also deporting families. So all this stuff is connected, and there's just a huge, huge, huge distrust, and there's been so much harm done to community, I don't see a way forward with Minneapolis police.
Wow. So Stephen Fletcher, who is one of the city council members representing Ward 3 in Minneapolis, wrote a piece in Time magazine about how we must disband the police. I mean, I honestly never thought I would see such a headline, particularly from somebody in power. What does it mean? What would it mean to disband Minneapolis's police department? What would replace it?
That's what we're all trying to figure out. That would be a long conversation, but it'd be some type of community engagement resource. Like, I don't know if it's like a block security situation. There'd be like mental health intervention and engagement. So if someone's having like a mental health crisis, you don't call the police, you call someone who specializes in dealing with like mental health crises. We're still figuring that out, and there's a lot of stuff that's being dreamed up and planned up right now. But I think that's going to be the most challenging piece. It's like getting disbanded, I feel, is doable and can happen. But it's like, what do we do after that? Because we also know that Trump is, you know, very, very much so in support of a police state and a police country. So I'm also not sure what are like the federal implications of that happening. Like, what will Trump do if he sees that Minneapolis is deciding to disband the police, and what power does he have as a president to like make that not happen? Because I don't see Trump being okay with that in any way, shape, form, or fashion.
Well, it would be interesting to see how the proponents of states' rights, the right-wing proponents of states' rights, would respond to such a thing. Let's talk about Bob Kroll. This is the man who is the leader of the Minneapolis Police Union, a strong Trump supporter, a man who called George Floyd a violent criminal. How powerful is the Minneapolis Police Union, and who is Bob Kroll?
So Bob Kroll is, he's the union president, who actually happens to be married to a news anchor who's a part of WCCO. And she reports on his stories, which is very wild. That's a whole other situation.
Wow.
But so Bob Kroll is our union president, and he's a known racist. He shows up to Trump's rallies, and he's been known to just be overtly like connected to like white supremacist groups, whether it's like the Aryan Cowboys or biker gangs around here. There's been pictures of him with like jackets with logos and things like that. So his affiliation and to white supremacy is well known. And he always backs the officers in these cases. Like he's up to bat right now. He's like, we need to make sure that these officers are taken care of. We need to make sure that they're able to get their stories out. He's extremely pro-police, and he's like, we're going to protect our own at all costs. And that's always how he's shown up. The high-profile case we had with Jamar Clark was very similar, where he did everything in his power to discredit Jamar and, like, slander Jamar. And like you said, say he was a violent criminal, is what you said about George Floyd. He said the same thing about Jamar Clark. So he has this track record of trying to discredit folks who have been violently murdered by his boys and going to bat for them in any way he can. And whether it's a public statement or making sure that they're on paid leave, like he's very, very consistent in how he shows up for officers that have been involved in these high profile cases.
How do you view the national response to the protests and to George Floyd's killing, then the national black leadership? Al Sharpton, who is in Minneapolis and spoke at Floyd's memorial, has announced a new March on Washington led by families of black people killed by police. Barack Obama has been speaking out about this and giving virtual town halls and writing about it. A lot of politicians have been speaking out, both black and non-black, claiming that they deeply care about race, about people of color, about black people, and are disgusted by police brutality.
I'm all for it. There's always going to be this disconnect around abolition and reform, because there's a lot of folks who feel like we can still work with the police and there's just a couple things that we need to like patch up and then we'll be set to go. But I really feel like this younger generation is like, hey, we don't need police and we can dream something new and we can abolish the police. And that's very much so where I'm at. I consider myself an organizer, but I'm also an abolitionist. I'm not a reformist. And so a lot of the things that I'm seeing put out right now are, it's reform. It's like DeRay put out his 10 points around like how we can, you know, have better policing in America. And a lot of it was reform. It's like body cameras.
This is DeRay McKesson, who is a high profile activist, you know, and has received some criticism from folks with Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, and so DeRay, he's someone I know, and this is not me coming at him or anything, but it's more so like that's still reform. And where we're at right now, we need abolition. And so that's really how I feel about the work they're doing. That's great. But all that energy put into reform is not going to do it. All that energy put into abolition will.
I'm wondering if you've seen the story of how the Movement for Black Lives had ordered hundreds of masks for protesters around the country, including those in Minneapolis, had mailed them to cities, and those masks just simply say, stop killing black people. Now it turns out that law enforcement has seized the masks. That's all that the organizers know when they contacted U.S. Postal Service with their tracking information. They were told law enforcement had seized these masks. To me, this is very interesting symbolism there, but what do you make of this?
The symbolism is wild, actually. It feels like it's a slap in the face. Like, if you're going to be out here protesting us, like, we're going to make sure that I don't know, we hit you where it hurts, or we make sure you're not protected. It feels really personal, almost. I'm sure like police officers are taking this personal. But yeah, that feels really personal, really like disrespectful.
There's
and really
been,
uncalled for.
Yeah, there's been a tremendous savagery, brutality, and barbarism by police in cities around the country that are protesting, not just George Floyd, but every victim of police brutality in their own city. Are you seeing Minneapolis police engage in similar brutality during the protests against police brutality?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, their tactics are, I mean, the way they're trained is they're thinking that these things that they're using are nonviolent, like tear gas and rubber bullets, but they're not using them how they're trained to use them. They're supposed to shoot a rubber bullet at the ground and then have the rubber bullet hit you after it hits the ground. But we're seeing in Minneapolis folks get hit in the face with tear gas canisters, get hit in the face with rubber bullets, in the back of the head with rubber bullets. We had a case here where now our city council member, Jeremiah Ellison, back in 2015, when we had the fourth precinct occupation, he had an officer point a rubber bullet gun at his face, and that video went viral. And we're seeing the same things happen here. There's a video or a photo going viral of a kid sitting on his dad's back and the officer's aiming a rubber bullet gun at them. And I believe that's from the state. And so we've seen it firsthand too. Officers just turn up for no reason. Folks are being peaceful. We're also seeing police not do their job when it comes to like stopping outside agitators. Like, we had a semi truck recently come through a protest, and it very much so seemed like the police had let them through.
I understand that the driver was arrested, but then not charged.
Yes. Yes, he was arrested and not charged. And folks are very, very pissed about that because it doesn't make sense, especially like the folks in my family who drive semis. They said, like, we're trained to like stop. Like, there's no way that man didn't see that crowd.
Right. There were 5,000 to 6,000 people on a highway that was closed to traffic when the tanker started barreling through and actually was speeding and endangered, you know, the people that were there. The driver claims that he sort of panicked, but yeah, it's amazing to think about why one would decide to speed up instead of slowing down and coming to a complete halt. Well, finally, what is your message to the rest of the country, Michael? You're on the ground in Minneapolis. Your city is like, the current day Ferguson, Missouri. All eyes are on you, on what's happening, and there's just this massive uprising, what many feel like is a revolutionary moment in the United States. I mean, it has become mainstream to say Black Lives Matter when just a few years ago it was considered far too political a statement.
It feels like the work that we've been putting in as chapters, we're shutting the streets down, shutting down highways, shutting down malls, police precincts, like all of that stuff was so necessary to set this foundation for folks to be able to have these conversations. But like you said, like folks were looking at us like we were crazy. And I feel like the public has been completely polarized. Because it's now it's like either you are for Black people being killed in the street, like brutally in cold blood on live video, or you're not. And that's something that's completely different, that polarization of the public. And also, what I would just want to let folks know is that change is really possible, especially if you're looking at your city. When I look at the country, it feels really daunting. It feels really impossible. It feels really hard, especially because we're up against Trump. But when I look at my city and when I look at my state, I see that we can change some things. Like we're talking about disbanding the police in Minneapolis, and that's giving me a lot of hope. I'm seeing hotels, large hotels, who usually are centered or, steeped in capitalism, like they would never let a homeless person come stay there, open their doors to the homeless community in Minneapolis to come stay there and learn how to run the facilities. It's like the world that we want is really possible if we like really start from a local level and we don't try to go so big. It's like the presidential election is important as hell. It's really important. We need to make sure that we vote Trump out, but also we need to make sure that we're involved in our local politics and what's happening locally, because I'm not friends with Trump. I'm never going to be friends with him, but my council members I'm friends with, I can call them whenever, and there's a personal relationship there, and I can get a bunch of people to show up to their house if they don't do something that we want them to do. It's like, so change is very possible in your state, in your city, and if we're all changing our cities and our states and we're following the example of each other, then we can change the country. But it's like this top-down model that has to happen. We're not going to do it from the top down. It's going to be from the bottom up.
I want to thank you so much, Michael, for joining us today. Good luck to you. Stay safe out there.
All right. Thank you.
My guest has been Michael McDowell, community organizer at Westside Community Organization, closely involved with Black Lives Matter Minneapolis. We've been discussing the epicenter of the national uprising against police brutality. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes, and now Spotify.